And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Thank you, football. Thank you, Week 18. My goodness, what a way to finish the NFL regular season as we welcome you to another Monday edition here of Move the Sticks. Rhett Lewis, our former NFL scouts, Daniel Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks. Guys, I mean, like, we're going to get into all of it here, the coaching news, the GM news, but can we just, like, just sit for a second and bask in the glow of a fantastic and furious race to the finish line in the NFL? I mean, was that...
What do you think, Buck? What do you think, Buck?
I have never seen anything like it. The NFL continues to be the best soap opera running on TV. The things that happen in the season finale, I mean, like, it is the craziest that I've ever seen. Like, the improbable happening. Jacksonville, just watching the Colts melt down in a pressure game was unbelievable. Oh. Like, seeing all of this stuff.
Wait till you see it on Hard Knocks.
I mean, just an unbelievable time. The San Francisco 49ers rallying back from 17, then capping it off with the Sunday game. I mean, just
DJ seeing the game of the century in the regular season. I mean,
right? I got a text from a buddy that's been in the league for over 30 years, and he said, "Congratulations, that might be the best football game that I've ever seen." Yeah. And I'm sitting here going, "This guy's got a lot of experience," and I'm kind of going through my Rolodex on the drive home. And
Rams Chiefs Monday night.
I mean, Rams Chiefs Monday night was a fun one, but I'm just thinking of the ones I was at. Like, I was at the Malcolm Butler interception Super Bowl, which was a shocking moment. But that was one moment. Clemson, Alabama national championship game, phenomenal game, excellent finish.
Auburn Florida State.
Me and Bucky were together at the Auburn Florida State with Kelvin Benjamin in the back of the end zone from Jameis. So I'm kind of rolling through all these games, and I'm like, you know what? I don't think what were there 6 fourth down conversions? I think Herbert
with threw, what was on the line?
It was fourth down and long, including a 4th and 20 plus, and he freaking fires a touchdown. I came out of words. I said at one point in time after that touchdown, Buck, I said that was for me Michael Jordan jumping from the free throw line level of jaw dropping. play. Like, I don't know what else to equate that to.
Well, two of them, DJ. I think that's the thing. I think last night what it did is, I think it goes down as one of the best, if not the best game, because of the implications, right?
Yeah.
Because it's the winner go home thing. Like,
yeah.
Someone is the loser leave town match, right?
Yeah.
And so with all of what was on the line, to see the Raiders jump out and play the way they play great defense for maybe three and a half quarters, they're playing great defense. And then it's the value of having a legitimate franchise quarterback. Yeah. And I think now more than ever, what it will make me do, I will grade so much harder when it comes to quarterbacks. Like, that it quality.
Bars raised.
I mean, like, yeah, that it quality is so important. And the fact that Justin Herbert, you talk about 6 fourth down conversions. It hadn't been done since like 1970. Like,
it's crazy.
And the way that he was dealing, because it's not just 4th and 1, it's 4th and 10, and he's dropping dime after dime. And it was one of those things where I'm like, man, if you're in overtime, you're the Raiders. You're like, please let us get the toss. Yeah. Like, don't give it. Because he was on fire. And I'd never seen anybody act like that with that kind of stuff on the line.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So look, we're going to dig deeper into this one, into the Brandon Staley strategy, the 4th down earlier in the game from his own 18-yard line, from the timeout at the very end, the potential of the tie, how it all worked in. We'll get into that here coming up. We'll also get into the draft order, which is set for the first 18 picks. We'll dig into that a little bit, pick our most intriguing playoff matchups as all of them are set. We have 6 matchups coming up on Super Wild Card Weekend. By the way, 5 of the 6 are rematches.
Yeah, how about that?
So that's pretty cool. We'll get into all of that, but let's begin with the news of the day, which is some really big news on the coaching and GM front, as we've seen. Really started with, I guess, we saw some things that were expected. I think we expected to hear Vic Fangio's name go, and that happened on Sunday. Today, kind of one of the bigger surprises, though, guys, in Miami. Let's start right there with the Dolphins announcing that Brian Flores is out as their head coach. GM Chris Greer will stay. DJ, surface thought on what that means in Miami here.
Well, I mean, I think everybody was shocked by it. I think probably the three of us would be included in that as being shocked by the move. Here's all I can say. I don't know Brian Flores. I respect the job that he did there to have two, you know, back-to-back winning seasons. It's hard to do in the NFL, especially you're starting over, starting new and getting that thing up and running the way he did. I'll just say this, and I'll be curious Bucky's take on this, because I've known Chris Greer for close to 20 years. Chris Greer, I don't know anybody in the league that has a better reputation as a human being. Now, people can nitpick him and, Tua over Herbert, and, you know, is he a great GM? I'll leave that debate. That's for everybody to have. That's fair game. But I just know Chris has a reputation, and it's been earned, of being as high class, high character, a great communicator, an overall great dude. So I kind of look at this from the outside and I say, man, it must have been pretty bad in there. It must have been pretty toxic with that relationship for them to make this move. And me personally, I'm going to trust Chris just based off of my knowledge of knowing him over the years, that this was probably not a good situation. Buck, I don't know where you are on that.
No, I mean, I think it obviously had to do something with that. You know, the relationship, and look, it's a people business and it's a relationship business. And my concern would be, like, we've seen multiple assistants come out of the New England program and have these issues when it comes to communicating with those in the building. And I will say, to maybe even protect them a little bit, is maybe what happens is the reason why it works in New England is not only because it's Bill Belichick, but you have a team full of people who kind of understand the high level of accountability and maybe the abrasive challenging that you may have to maybe get the best performance out of those people. But when you don't have people who are used to that, it does become very, very uncomfortable. And I think the uncomfortable conversations and the uncomfortable environment makes people feel a certain way. And I think, look, success on the field is one thing, but man, if you have a miserable environment, it just makes it very, very hard. And I'm saying that given Brian Flores the utmost respect for the job that he's done, to go 8-1 down the stretch, to do what he's done, two winning seasons back to back after kind of doing the rebuild, look, he deserves a lot of credit for that. But I think we're at a different time where people just are uncomfortable having an environment that's not harmonious.
Yeah.
A couple of things to consider here, because there will be reverberations from this move. And Dolphins owner Stephen Ross already coming out, you know, they've made it official. He's coming out and talking about it, says he will not be the one to pull Jim Harbaugh from Michigan. Noted Michigan man, Stephen Ross, donor at Michigan, will not pull. Yes, DJ.
Can I just interrupt you there for a second?
You okay. May.
Because let's, you know, if you go to board a ship or a boat, right? You have the dock, right? Oh, you know how you can pull somebody onto the boat, but also the other person can jump onto the boat.
Walk on.
So he might not necessarily be pulling Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh might be just leaping onto that boat by himself. That he left himself. I think everybody's just kind of dismissed it. Like, forget Jim Harbaugh to Miami. I didn't take it that way. I took it as, hey, I hope he needs to stay at Michigan. But man, if he wants to go coach in the NFL and he's dead set on that, then, you know, I guess we'll tell. You know,
there's now three destinations that are technically open that have Jim Harbaugh somewhat connections.
Well, I'm gonna throw some water on that, because I don't think there are. I and Bucky and I feel like we're always kind of at the beginning of a lot of these conversations. We had the Harbaugh Raiders conversation 2 weeks ago. And then I feel like a week later, everybody kind of jumped in that water with us. And so we were the first one in the water, Buck. I'm going to be the first one out of the water.
I don't think
Rich Bisaccia is not the head coach. They're the 5 seed after all they've 100%. Been through. There is no way on God's green earth that he's not the head coach of the Raiders.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Like, I thought it was a done deal. And I thought it was very important. I think he realized the importance of getting into the playoffs and how it would do his legacy. And DJ, that's why when we talk about the Charger game, all of those factors are in there. Everyone on the sideline understands, hey, man, if we get into the playoffs, we have an opportunity to keep running this back.
Yep.
And so all of that plays into the thinking. So I absolutely believe that, look, Harbaugh is not in the mix. The Chicago thing is the one that might
if you're
be
betting, is that where – I mean, we're not betting, but if you were guessing – that one feels like that one, right?
I mean, that would be the one that's surprised.
Of course.
Like, because as much as we talk about his relationship with both Shin Beckler and all that other stuff, like, he also has some times with Mike Ditka during his days with the Bears. And to me, he kind of fits what the Bears are about, right? Like there's a toughness and a roughness about how he is. Yeah, he's an offensive
Midwest guy.
But the way that they play, the way that he plays, his teams play, it absolutely fits in Chicago. And if you go back,
but what if we had Michigan versus Ohio State part two in that in the race for that Chicago job with Ryan Day? We won't get into that just yet. I'm going to get to the Bears here in a second, but I just mentioned the Miami part of that for Harbaugh, considering the connections. And thank you for pouring water on that to Vegas. I am 100% in agreement with you guys that Rich Bisaccia has earned and deserves that job as the full time head coach there. I'd love to see what he and Mayock can do moving forward with that roster. But also the Deshaun Watson quotient here from Miami, because our Ian Rappaport has mentioned that big piece of Deshaun Watson's interest in Miami had to do with Brian Flores being the head coach, with Chris Greer being the GM. Where that power struggle, where that disconnect, where that discord was happening, how much of that had to do with the quarterback, I think is really interesting. Who was really into his camp? Who was on to his side? Who was Team Watson? Let's bring him in. And then how does that all factor in here in the choice for the next head coach?
I mean, look, it's not a secret. Everybody in the NFL knows that Deshaun Watson has been angling to get himself to Miami. And I think Flores is a part of that.
Yeah.
I have a hard time believing that was a 100% Brian Flores operation. The only reason that he wanted to go replace
not the
Tua
only
there.
Reason, but one
no,
reason.
But I don't see who replaces Miami as his number one choice. I don't see him, you know, in Philadelphia, probably at this point in time, I don't know if they'd want to part with all the picks they have to part with. They're a playoff team with Jalen Hurts. They got three first rounders they can build around him, and they've got something going. Yeah. And so then you got all the drama that comes along with Watson. You're going to have to deal with as well. I don't know that they would sign up for that. So when I look around trying to find the place, Buck Denver, but I don't know. It's a great football fit. But I thought Miami was a lot more than just Brian Flores personally.
Yeah, and I think so. And I think the way it played out, I think because it was so loud, I think it put maybe everybody in the building in a weird spot with the quarterback, right? With Tua, regardless of whether you like him or not, like he's your quarterback now. And so you have to deal with it. You got a young quarterback, you're trying to figure out how to play with him. And then when you don't make the move, if you're going to flirt and do all that other stuff, then the move has to happen. Because what happens is now you have scars. And the scoring, I think, certainly impacted Tua. Now, I would say this. Tua hasn't played the way that I thought he would play coming into the league. And I think we have to, kind of have that conversation. Like, hey, he's not what we thought he would be coming into the league. And, you know, I can sense the frustration with Brian Flores there, like all that other stuff between he and the quarterback needing to play maybe better and those things. And so when you have all of those factors in, and, you know, it's a little bit of a political play in the building where you have people kind of lined up behind their candidates when it comes to quarterback and all that other stuff, like you have a lot of back channel conversations. And so it's unfortunate that it played out the way that it played out today. But I mean, that's the reality of the league.
Yeah. So that's maybe the biggest surprise of the day, right? To see Brian Flores gone. It was no surprise to see Matt Nagy out in Chicago. I mean, gosh, as unfortunate as it was, we've been talking about it for months now, really, even more than a year, considering some of the issues that that team has had. Somewhat of a surprise to see Ryan Pace go as general manager after the patience that they had shown him. It is rare that a GM gets to trade up twice for a franchise quarterback and gets to hire three head coaches. That obviously wasn't going to be the case in Chicago. Ryan Pace also out as the GM there. Interesting situation there. They've got some talented pieces on that roster. Obviously none greater than Justin Fields, considering the potential. Guys, how do you view the process to bring in the new power structure here, DJ, in Chicago? Is it traditional? We go GM first, GM hires the head coach, or is it something different here? What makes the most sense for Chicago?
Well, to me, the only way you're going head coach first is if you're going big game hunting, you know, and
it's a Harbaugh or something.
I don't know, Buck, if you can think of another name. Harbaugh would be the only one I could think of. You'd say, okay, you want somebody with head coaching experience. Well, Doug Peterson kind of comes from the same tree that Nagy came from. Obviously, Peterson's won a Super Bowl, and that's nothing to sneeze at. But I don't really see him going that route. So to me, when I kind of look at the names for them, you know, the one that I would not rule out for them, and I know this guy's name's been brought up for jobs before, and he's never shown any interest, but this is the one NFL job that I think Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern would at least be intrigued by. And he is, you want to talk about being popular in the city of Chicago? Wow. Jim Harbaugh would be a home run. They would be
Chicago's Big Ten team.
The Bears would be fired up. I think their fans and that community would be fired up with Pat Fitzgerald. He's beloved in Chicago. And I know, look, Matt Rhule hasn't worked out great. I know the Urban Meyer thing was a flop. Pat Fitzgerald's a little different than those guys, just in terms of
that's a culture dude right there.
Oh my gosh. So, but to answer your question, yeah. I'm always going to be in favor of hiring the GM, letting the GM go find a coach that he works yeah. well with and that fits, and then they can be kind of locked together going forward. I think that's the proper way to go, unless you go big game hunting.
Yeah, I think Jim Harbaugh is the main name that I would think about, like that where you would give him the opportunity to be the czar of the organization, where he's the head coach, he has all the power, he picks his person and comes along with. If it's not that, then I think it has to be the traditional way of hire a general manager, the general manager then hires the coach and all that. But I think this job is kind of like fool's gold in a little bit, because when you dig deep and look at their roster, I mean, it's a major rebuild in my estimation. The offensive yeah. line is in shambles. The defense is older and it's not playing at the same level that it once played at when we thought about them in their heyday with Khalil Mack and that stuff. No first round pick. You got the young quarterback, but you don't really have a lot around him. And so I don't think this is one where you jump in and you're like, all right, good to go. New coach, new scheme.
Well,
yeah, I think
that's a good point, Bucky, because in the division, you know, just a little ways away in Minneapolis, now that roster looks a whole lot different, right? Because there's some
serious, that's a better job. That's a better job.
Marquee talent, yeah. Dalvin mm-hmm. Cook, Adam Thielen. Talk about the pieces on defense. Go ahead, Deej.
But that's the, you know what? It's a good debate because we're going to see the national championship game tonight, right? And we're going to, yep. and we've talked about this a little bit. Georgia has a better roster. Alabama has a better quarterback. The better quarterback mopped the floor with the better roster. So yeah. then you look going forward. Kirk Cousins is a competent, solid starter right now. He's got better 1 year left. I yeah. don't know how long that's going to last, mm-hmm. but at least the Bears have that central piece that's in yeah. place potentially for the next 15 years. Yeah, while right. the Minnesota Vikings are going to spend some time trying to find that guy. The roster's outside the quarterback. It's not close. I mean, to me, the Minnesota is stacked, and you could come in there and win 11, 12 games next year. That's not far-fetched.
Yeah, no, I think it's funny, and I think there's always a recency bias. But I think now I am impacted by the fact that if you don't have a quarterback, you don't have a chance. Like, yeah. we can talk about trucks and trailers and all this stuff. Like, you can be a trailer and get to the thing on occasion. You're not going to do that successfully time after time after time after time. Like, the quarterback trumps everything. And for me to come around, like, just seeing it, like, just watch it, how the quarterbacks, the elite quarterbacks, take over. Josh Allen, the takeover the last couple of weeks when the Buffalo Bills needed to win games, Josh Allen said, okay, yep. I got this. Don't worry, but I'll take care of it. I mean, that's what they do. Tom Brady, all the noise all week. Oh, AB, this and that. I got this. I'll calm it all down.
Yep.
And I think it's really important that when you're looking at jobs, you better have a quarterback, or you better have a plan to get a quarterback right away. Because if you don't have a quarterback, you have a chance. Because everyone who's getting fired, a lot of times it has to do with the quarterback not performing yeah. or not being good enough at the quarterback position to win games.
And that was the other surprising piece of this. Again, there have been rumblings about Mike Zimmer being out this year. Not as much heat on Rick Spielman. Yeah. Who has been there for 16 years.
Because we just talked about the roster.
Terrific roster. He's made some terrific draft picks. Justin Jefferson, obviously Dalvin Cook in the second round has been huge. The defensive pieces have been like a solid core there. Danielle Hunter only plays, what, 7 games this year?
Yep.
And they were out. So, like, I think it'll be really intriguing to see who the Vikings go after from a personnel standpoint, because they just had George Payton, right? Who would seem to be the heir apparent, and then let him leave for Denver this past year, right?
It's such a weird thing, man. Like yeah. right now, I mean, there are a lot of good guys, a lot of good buddies of ours that are qualified, but then you're sitting and you're looking at these jobs and you're trying to figure out who fits where, what would be the right fit for the guys that we know based on their personality and their belief system and the success that they've had and all of that other stuff. And then you wonder, did Will make the move with somebody internally in mind? Like, that's the thing that we don't know, because it's so weird. And DJ and I can talk about, like, when you work there, you have these conversations with ownership and people and all that other stuff, and you never know how it impacts how they view you.
Yeah.
Or you never know, like, what the internal view is on someone. Is there a rising star who they feel like, hey, look, he learned. We can keep some of the continuity in place, but maybe this guy gives us an opportunity to be even better. Like, we, I mean, it's just one of those weird occurrences. Yeah.
What do you guys think about this? I'll get both your opinions on this, because I've long subscribed to the opposite theory, right? Whoever leaves, you hire the opposite.
For sure.
So, like when I look at the Minnesota head coaching job, Zimmer's an X's and O's guru. Like, he's as respected a defensive mind as there is in football. Like, he's been outstanding. Sure. And I think, but maybe from like a soft edges, communicative, like, yeah, you know, that kind of
lovey-dovey
guy. Yes. Yes. So like kind of that type of a coach. And then I think about the Denver Broncos, Vic Fangio, kind of an older, rough, curmudgeon-y, yeah, defensive, yeah, in the weeds, X's and O's guy. Like, I think they try and find like a big personality type to replace him. And then with Nagy with Chicago, I think of, okay, kind of, you know, somewhat obscure, unknown, who came in there. So now you go find a made man, which is, you know, Harbaugh. I think it's interesting when you look at these jobs from the standpoint of the opposite thing. Now, Jacksonville, what's the opposite of Urban Meyer? I don't know how to help you with that one.
I wish I could shed more light on that situation. I think the Jacksonville situation is such a weird deal because yesterday, maybe you guys weren't aware, but because I'm tied to the organization like theirs, it was a clown out. People showed up.
And they won the game.
In clown suits.
And Trevor has his best game.
Yeah.
Right?
Clown suits. And they played their tails off. Trevor played the best game that he played.
Yeah.
They played lifestyle. You're looking at the team, you're trying to figure out, like, who is this team? Where is this team?
Where are these people?
Where has this team been hiding? And so now it's, okay, so you had the clown out to show your displeasure with ownership right now, retaining the general manager, but you get a win. So now what? How much does that cloud everything? Not for the fans, but for ownership. Like,
well, I don't want to get you. I don't want to get you in trouble, Buck. Don't even answer if I put you in an uncomfortable spot.
By the way, Nathaniel Hackett interviewing later this week. The
Packers. Been in the building before.
I'll just say this. Yeah. I know some of these dudes who are up for that job.
They will not go.
They don't want it, and they acknowledge. I think this quarterback's going to be great, but that's not. I'm not taking that job. Maybe I'll interview. Get the experience. All that, but. And no, I'm not taking that job.
And is that because of general manager? Is that because of organizational function?
I'll leave that up to you to add that together.
So here's what I would say. I would say that what needs to happen is an organizational reset. All right. And so whoever comes in, and this is what they thought they were getting. Organization needs to be unified from top to bottom on both sides, business and football side. Everything needs to be like the silo needs to be correct. And so that person needs to be what I say, like the reason why I say it has to be someone with experience and know-how. That person needs to, hey, from day one, when they walk in the building, here's how we're operating. This is where we're going. This is what it looks like. This is how we're going to collab. It's going to be great. We're going to have this interacting thing and all this other stuff, because it's been so fractured for over a decade that it's hard. A coach with a great playbook is not going to change the culture. It's not going to change the winning factor. It has to be someone who has a presence, who has the ability to bring everybody together and move them forward. And so the leadership part of it is more important than any of the stuff that happens in the playbook. And look, that personnel piece is huge because you got a lot of different things in the building that are working on. And so you got to be able to get along and figure out how you're going to do it.
Just recapping then, before we move on here, 6 head coaching openings as of this taping here this morning. Sounds like as of right now, there will not be a 7th in New York in Rapport by Garofolo. All reporting, Joe Judge has been meeting with coaches and players today with an eye towards him leading this team into the future. General manager could, of course, be another story. We'll, of course, keep an eye on that. But the Giants and the Jets there after a disappointing football season in the New York, New Jersey area, both with 2 top 10 draft picks. Get into the top 10 here in just a bit as well. 2 GM openings as of right now in Minnesota and in Chicago. And really, I guess, guys, according to us here, there's really only 5 head coaching openings. We fully expect Rich Bisaccia to get the full-time gig in Las Vegas as they prepare for the postseason. How they got there is, of course, the subject and one of the headlines of this NFL season and perhaps this NFL century. We get into it right after this quick break. game of the week, game of the year, game of the decade. I mean, like, game of what? Like, you just pick the superlative. Raiders Chargers from Las Vegas last night was everything you ever wanted in a football game, with all of the implications and everything on the line. And the Raiders end up with the victory and punching their ticket to the postseason after all that they'd been through this year. DJ, you were at this game, calling it as part of the Chargers broadcast. Obviously, disappointment on the Chargers side with how it ended. I'll give you the floor to start this thing here and how you saw it develop.
Well, first of all, somebody on the way home called and said, you need to save your credential because they'll be talking about this game in 20 years. And what I realize, I'm very tough on my credentials here. I mean, that thing is in rough shape. So I don't think I'm going to be keeping this. So
you can get it laminated.
Send that to somebody. I've never been at a more entertaining game, a more stressful game. And I'm sitting there, the significance of it, with three fan bases locked in, knowing that their postseason fate rides on this game. I mean, it was like nothing I've ever seen before. And just fourth down after fourth down, Herbert was incredible. The Raiders, as you mentioned, so much grit, so much toughness, in my opinion. And I'm stepping back from this, and I know I call the games for the Chargers. I think the talent disparity between those teams was vast. I think the Chargers have a much better team on paper than the Raiders did. But the Chargers shot themselves in the foot with a bunch of stuff, which we'll get into. And the Raiders' grit and toughness, and they were more physical at the biggest moments of the game. And they also featured their best players. They don't have a ton of big-time guys, but Max Crosby dominated the football game off the edge. Yeah. They got him on Storm Norton, and the Chargers didn't have any answer for it. Hunter Renfrow, down in the red zone, dominated. Their stars in those big moments kind of carried them. And Josh Jacobs, no flash, but I feel, Buck, we've been on this. We've been riding this train here for the last month or so as we start looking towards a draft. Give me the 220-pound backs, because you might have 10 carries for 20 yards in the first half, but eventually in the third and fourth quarter, you don't want to tackle a 220-pound guy, and that was the run that really sealed their fate.
Yeah, there was two runs. DJ, like, everyone, it's funny, everyone gave Derek Carr a lot of credit for the victory, but that last drive was a Josh Jacobs drive. Yeah. Yes, Derek Carr made a critical throw to Bryan Edwards on the sideline. But Josh Jacobs had two big runs. He had a big run.
Leatherwood even had a big block.
Yeah, that flipped the field, because it was like a 28-yard run. They got him around midfield, which gave the Raiders breathing room. Because you got to remember, they're leaking oil badly on defense. Like, it is a situation where I'm like, if they punt, it's a wrap. If they punt the ball back to Justin Herbert, it's game over, because he's hot. The defense is trying to figure it out. And those things, Josh Jacobs popped a couple of different runs. Then that 10-yard run to put him in field goal range did it. I think what was apparent to me from a scouting perspective or team building, your defensive line, you have to have dudes on the defensive line so you can rush four. That was apparent the entire game, the way both teams elected to opt for coverage as opposed to pressure. The Raiders played Gus Bradley's regular three deep man-to-man system where they just alternated between man-to-man and their three-deep zone, and they just let Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue and those guys up front game stunts, Max. Loops. Wow. It was a four-man rush all game. On occasion, they did a five-man pressure, but that's it. Then they locked up and played coverage. The same thing on the back end with the Raiders, double-teaming and trying to figure out how they wanted to take away Waller and Renfrow. And so you better have pass rushers in place to be able to get it done. And then DJ talked about it earlier. Yeah, man, it's a big man game. I want corners that are over 6 feet tall. I want corners that can match up and lock up and do some of those things.
And can fill against the run, to be honest, because they're gonna make those guys tackle. They're gonna make them tackle.
And this is the other thing. And look, I have a contentious relationship with the Nerds, even though I do believe in analytics and those things. But there's certain things in the game that we cannot throw away. As we get into the stretch and we get to winning time, the running game matters. And for a large part of the season, people were content to sit in two high looks and just let people have the slow death, right? Oh, I'd let them run it or whatever. But when it comes to games and control, you have to be able to turn the spigot off. At times, you got to be able to stop the run and make people throw the ball. And if you don't pay attention to your run defense, it costs you, particularly down when we're getting closer to the tournament, when it becomes more of a complimentary game and time of possession and all that other stuff really matters and who wins and who loses.
All right, so let's get to the end of game sequence here. And first, we'll just say, look, that the 19-play drive that started just north of the two-minute warning that featured 19 throws and three fourth-and-long conversions by Justin Herbert and the Chargers offense was insane. And then you had the gotta-have-it throw to Mike Williams in between two defenders for the touchdown to tie it. Somewhat surprised that Staley didn't go for the two-point conversion, considering what we saw on his own 18-yard line earlier in the third quarter, the two-pointer that would have won it and saved overtime. But knowing that a tie got him into overtime.
You have to kick it, right? Yeah,
obviously had to kick it. We all understand that. And then the tie, as you know, would have gotten both teams into the postseason, which is what we thought we were barreling towards. Mm-hmm. Oh, here we go. Breaking news. Dave Gettleman has announced his retirement from the New York Giants. Again, that was a move we thought might happen there. So we do have a new football personnel executive coming to the New York Giants. All right, let's get back to this game, though. So you're in overtime. Both teams kick a field goal. Raiders get the ball back here, knowing that the next score of any type wins the game, but a tie would get both teams into the playoffs and send the Steelers out of the playoffs. By the way, DJ, you didn't get to see it because you were in the booth, but there were Steelers fans in the crowd wearing Steelers jerseys that were being shown like this at the end of the game, literally beside themselves, understanding that a tie would have kicked the Steelers out of the postseason. Okay. So you have the Raiders kind of marching down the field, Bucky, as you mentioned, with Josh Jacobs in the run game, eating up the Chargers defense, which, look, we'd seen for much of this season, right? And then it just felt like both teams were kind of just marching towards a tie here. There wasn't any real urgency. And then with 38 seconds left, Brandon Staley calls the timeout. Not because he wanted to get the ball back, as he said after the game, but because he wanted to make sure, knowing that on third and four, the Raiders were going to run the football, that he had his best, his premier run defense outfit for that personnel grouping on the field. Like, I don't have as much of an issue with the timeout as I do, like, the end result based on the logic. Like, if that was your best and you gave up the 10-yard chunk play.
They didn't sell out. They didn't sell out either.
I don't get it. That part I don't get. Because I don't know that the timeout with 38 seconds was like forced Rich Bisaccia to change his thinking and be like, oh, okay, well, now we're going to kick the field goal. No, they changed their thinking because they got 10 yards on the third down run. Right.
That's why I didn't understand, because I didn't know. I'm not watching the game. So I know obviously it was talked about in the broadcast and then it was talked about after the game about, you know, the timeout. Look, it's not like they called a timeout and said, oh, let's put together the fanciest run play that anybody's ever seen. And now we're really going to get, it's a straight ahead run. There was nothing to it. They had a little bit of
a row in motion leading the way.
They were heavy right and they ran left and they didn't fill it properly. And you had a bad situation for the Chargers. They didn't get off the field. They needed to stop the run. They didn't stop the run. I was saying during the broadcast, guys, the exact opposite of, I thought he should have used his timeouts as early as possible in that last sequence, because here you are, you're third and four, right? The one thing, and there, so that would have been they were at the 38 yard line. So that is a 55 yard field goal.
Yeah, right? It's like 55, 56 yard field goal.
So here's
would my have never thing. Taken that field goal.
So here's my thing. No, but never. Here's the thing. If you let the clock run all the way down and now there's 2 seconds, the Raiders can say, you know what? Trot out there. We'll kick the 55-yard field goal. He makes it. We win. He misses it. The game's over no matter what. The game is over.
They wouldn't have kicked it.
Yeah, but if you had 50 seconds, 60 seconds, somewhere like that left on the clock, they have to punt it. There's no chance on God's green earth they're going to attempt a field goal that ends the game for you. Your thing was you had to eliminate the field goal opportunity. And so to me, I didn't. They kind of went in between. It was like you let it go all the way down to 38 seconds, and then you call a timeout. I didn't get that. I thought you forced their hand that they can't kick, because I didn't want to be in a situation where they can sit here with 3 seconds left and go, we can kick it or not, you know. And at that point in time, we have no penalty for us kicking and attempting a field goal. There's none. The game's over. So that didn't happen.
So I think there are a couple of different things, right? So I think when you're Rich Bisaccia, from a coaching standpoint, what you're doing is, after the two field goals in overtime, I can't remember how much time was left when the drive started. It might have been like right around 3:30, somewhere in there. the one thing that you're thinking about is, okay, everyone
first
knows
down.
Everyone knows that, okay, we can't lose the game. We just can't lose the game because that eliminates us. So we need to get the ball out from our own end so we don't have a punt and then Justin Herbert can bring it back. So it's a mix of the Raiders playing offense while playing defense. Now, they surprised everybody when they first down, they take a shot and they move the ball down the field. Then they have a big run. I was like, oh, okay. So now they're midfield. So now what you're trying to do is like, okay, how aggressive do we want to be? If we throw it and have an interception,
they're not going to throw it. Yeah, you know they're not going to throw the ball.
Right. So then you're like, okay, run it. And so at this point, I'm like, they're kind of taking the collective breath because when the Chargers didn't use their timeout early, they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. It's almost like coaching the game at the first half, you're trying to see how the opponent's going to play it out. Like, hey, if they don't take a timeout, hey, guys, we're just running out, take it to half.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I felt like we were at that point where they were like, oh, they're not taking a timeout? Cool, because they had two of them.
Yeah.
And so now, though, when he uses the timeout and he has another one in his bag, so now Bisacci's trying to figure out, like, look, if we don't get the first down, we may have to either punt it back.
I think they punt. I think they 100% would have punted.
And so the reason why I believe they ran it is because they're like, look, I don't want to give him an incomplete. And now it's 4th and 4. I give it back to Herbert with a timeout. He can maybe connect on a pass, call a timeout, throw another pass because we've seen it. And then they kick a long field goal. So you try not to mess up the game. And by taking the timeout, I actually believe Staley did a disservice because now it flipped the thinking. But then when you give up the 10-yard play, they're like, well, we're
that's
not
the whole thing.
Now.
I mean, we can debate that until we're blue in the face. Yeah. You gotta stop. You can't give up a 10-yard run when everybody in the stadium knows you're running the football. You can't give up 10 yards.
You can't do it.
Because that's it. That was the only thing that couldn't happen.
Like Rhett was thinking, the reason why I didn't think they could pass because of incomplete, there's no way you can kick a 57-yard field goal.
No.
Because the only thing you're thinking, the ball. They're gonna block the kick, it's gonna come out low, they're gonna scoop and score, it's gonna be the kick six, and we're gonna lose the game. If I punt it and it nestles down in the 10-yard line, there's not enough time. There's not enough time on the clock for Justin Herbert to make a play to come back.
Speaking of time, I know we're running out of time, but to me, that was not as egregious as going forward on your own 18 at that point in time in the game against an offense that has done nothing. The Raiders offense had only scored points courtesy of a turnover on a punt and a penalty, a kind of a bad call, in my opinion, on a pass interference where you have somebody running a post and he throws a corner and 20 yards away from him and you got a pass interference call. But nonetheless, that's the only offense the Raiders had in the first half. And you just gave him 3 points. Like that to me was
points are at a premium. And I'll say this, DJ, the Raiders have left so many points on the field that when you have an opportunity in those games, those elimination games, if you have an opportunity to put points on the board, you got to keep putting points on the board. You need space and separation to prevent those things from happening. And when they didn't load it up, I was just like, man, like, don't give them the ball at 20. Like, don't give them 3 points. Make people earn the points. And it's hard, but I'll say this because we have to get off the topic. A couple years ago when the Falcons lost the Super Bowl 28-3, in the offseason, I had opportunity to bump into Devontae Freeman and Justin Hardy at a football camp. And at that camp, they were like, man, it's so hard. It's going to be so hard for us to pour it all in again when we're there 28-3. We have the chance. Mm-hmm. We have the ball. We're about to kick the field goal. They were like, it's just we did everything. We did Navy SEALs training. We did all this or whatever. And so the hardest thing, and we saw it with the Seahawks when they threw the pass and it was intercepted, the hardest thing will be for Brandon Staley to put Humpty Dumpty back together again. Because the defensive players can say, like, hey, we understood it or whatever. But you can't tell me that some of those offensive guys are not like, wait a minute, man. Like,
well, you saw Austin Eckler's reaction after the game talking to a Raiders player. You saw Herbert saying he was rooting for a tie harder than he ever has in his entire life and all that. But look, it was a heck of a game. The Raiders earned the opportunity. That I think we can all agree. And now they're going to get into the postseason and take on the Cincinnati Bengals. The 49ers also use overtime to punch their ticket to the postseason and a fantastic game here at SoFi Stadium beating the Rams. Rams are still in as NFC West.
Can I say this? Can I say this about a game? Sean McVay needs to stay out of the end zone celebrating with you.
I saw that. I got a lot of run, man.
Like you can't do that. Like it's cool. Like that's high school type stuff or whatever. You can't be in the end zone celebrating. Like pros, you can't do that. And I understand.
Yeah.
Like you get excited.
He was fired up. Yeah.
Those things kind of come back. They kind of come back on you.
I think somebody on social media had tweeted out that Shanahan after the game should just go straight Suge Knight. You want a real producer, not up all up in your videos, not rapping on your records.
Okay.
Yeah, man, you
come to death row.
Yeah,
I get it.
You just can't do some of that
stuff. And for the first time, guys, in NFL history, a team clenches a playoff berth in two separate overtimes, with the Pittsburgh Steelers getting past the Baltimore Ravens. Or rather, in a last second fashion, and then obviously using the Raiders win. So there you go, full playoff picture, full breakdowns of the postseason coming up throughout the week here on Move the Sticks. We will give you our most intriguing playoff matchups right after this quick break, as well as a look at the top 10 draft order. It's now set. Guys, let's take a look here at the top 10 draft order. First 18 picks are set now that the playoff field is also set. But the top 10 features the Jaguars at the top, back-to-back seasons here, Bucky. And then how about the New York football establishment here outside of the Buffalo Bills? Jets and Giants with two picks apiece each in the top 10. Bucky, let's start with the Jags here real quick with the back-to-back number ones.
Yeah, look, it's funny because it was a bonus. It was a win-win for them. Normally, when you win a game like they did at the end, you end up losing the lottery ticket to get the number one pick and those things. And so they were able to win. The Lions won, so that enabled the Jaguars to retain the number one pick. And so now you have to figure out, as we talk about in the classic team building fashion, what are the marquee players that you typically take number one? It's quarterback, pass rusher. And so offensive tackle, those are the things. And so now you have to look at the draft class and see, where do they want to go? Do they want to take one of the two pass rushers? Do they want to take the top offensive tackle? How do they want to go about building the franchise? That will be the debate for them going forward.
And then, DJ, just to look at the opportunity for the Jets and Giants here with, with two first-rounders in the top 10.
No doubt. The Giants sitting here picking 5 and 7. The Jets sitting here at 4 and 10. I think, you know, the good thing for the Jets is I think they feel good about Zach Wilson going forward. Now it's about trying to get him some more help. I think you look offensive line. I think on that defense, looking on the defensive line, I think it's a big guy draft for them. I think the Giants need some difference makers. They need some athletes and some real difference makers on the perimeter. We'll see what they end up doing there. New GM going to be making those picks. Dave Gettleman no longer there. So intrigue in the Big Apple with those two teams in the top 10 this year.
Yep, no question. And look, guys, 5 of the 6 matchups on Super Wild Card Weekend are going to be rematches. I'm telling you, just for my money, I cannot wait to see Cowboys and Niners. I just feel like that is the most intriguing matchup to me out of this whole thing.
But yeah, I think most pressure. Plenty,
right?
Most pressure on Dak Prescott in that game. It's the worst matchup for the Dallas Cowboys.
What's our Amazon game, Buck? Is it that one?
Oh, it is
Dallas. No, you guys.
Dallas. No, it's
Dallas. It is. That's Dallas it. 49. That's the biggest one. Yep.
There we go. We're back on Twitch, baby.
That is the.
I got Musburger in my head after being in Vegas. We're on Twitch, baby.
Jackpot, baby. Twitch.tv/movethesticks. There you go. All right. So that's going to do it for this episode of Move the Sticks. But again, a deep dive into the playoff matchups coming up, as well as any further coaching GM moves that are made throughout the week. It's all here on Move the Sticks. A reminder to rate, review, and ask a question in the ratings and reviews section of Apple Podcasts, and we'll answer it on a future podcast. Thanks so much for listening to Move the Sticks.